We are talking about leadership and leading different generations, and it's a really important subject because generally, in our experience, and as people know, people join a vision or they join an organization, but they leave the leaders. And we have both left jobs or positions or roles because we didn't want to work with the leader anymore. And I had to resign so he would still have his job because he didn't want to work with me anymore.
That's not true.
So actually, we've both experienced that. We've both left jobs or roles or positions, not because we didn't like the job, role, or position. We just didn't want to work under the leader anymore for whatever reason. And some of it could be generational, some of it could be cultural, but the point is, it's really understand if you are in leadership to understand that the dynamic has changed. And when I started in the workforce, the leader was king and everybody else just said, sir, yes, sir. And I went to military school, so that was even stronger, sir, yes, sir. But nowadays with other generations.
I am unique and I am wonderful and I must be admired for who I am as a person and you will love me because of it. Oh, and by the way, this is my first day on the job, but I should be the manager, but I would love to be the, you get the picture. Okay.
I work with this every day.
Every single day. I am unique. I am wonderful. Mr. Rogers told me so. It's okay. So here we go.
Okay. How do I go on from there? But one thing that's really important to understand, we are going to talk about generations, but obviously leadership and culture situations, it depends on cultures as well. A leadership culture in Romania, especially a Romanian church, is very different from a leadership culture in the UK or America, and then Japan, it's something completely different. So we do understand that there's lots of different caveats to leadership and culture in leadership. We are focusing on generational leadership, but we're going to talk in generalizations. So there's always exceptions to the rule, but we're talking in generalizations.
And Terry and I both have been living in Europe for, well, you've been 25 years, I've been 10 years something altogether, primarily in the Czech Republic. So also, though we are a Brit and an American, we still speak with a European heart and mindset because this is what we've been enmeshed in. But also too, as we look at culture today, especially in the younger generation, the gap between the West and, if you would say, the East has gotten smaller and smaller and smaller, and we're finally dealing with a truly global generation. But we'll get to that in a second.
Yeah, so other reasons why, what can we learn from Paul about culture?
Well, of course, I mean, if you want the example, you see Paul in Athens, and he goes and he just says, he speaks to them in their own language because he understands who they are, correct? You can see it in, people of Athens, I see that in every way you are very religious. For as I walked around and looked carefully at your objects of worship, I even found an altar with the inscription to an unknown God. So you are ignorant of the very thing you worship, and this is what I'm going to proclaim to you. So Paul met the people where they were at, and he understood the culture that he was working with. And again, this one, even bigger, and we can skip kind of to the bold one in particular, I have become all things to all people, so that by all possible means I might save some. Now, those of us that have been either in a youth ministry stance or other forms of ministry, this verse gets thrown around lots of different ways for lots of different reasons. But ultimately, what we are coming back to is saying, Paul knew who he was working with, and he knew what those people were like, and that was his method by which he was able to reach them most effectively.
There's one thing that I didn't say at the very beginning that maybe I should have said, especially in a forum being held in Poland, and that is this. In general, when we look at these dates are set by American sociologists, but Central and Eastern Europeans tend to be 4 to 6 years behind, not because we're slower, but just because. And so as we look at this, for example, my wife's a high school teacher, and when she talks about her final year students and she's like, tell me that Gen Z aren't like this, I'm like, no, that's millennials, because in this part of the world, they are on the border between millennials and our generations.
Let's talk about some key things we see within those generations in particular. So baby boomers, hardworking, job loyalty, promotion, that again, I'm going to be with a company for 30 years, all right? That's your entire lifespan, okay? Got it. And it's just one job, the same thing every day. No. Okay. Gen Xers, Terry?
Work-life balance. We were the generation that were like, okay, there you go. See, work-life balance. Job security. We do also want job security. And we want success. There is, but we're not quite sure what that is anymore because the baby boomers are keeping hold of the jobs that we want. So
thanks, Kevin.
And for us, there's a higher value on the result than the process. So we are a bit more touchy-feely, but we are thinking about, okay, here's the demand of the job. We want to get it done, which sometimes gets in trouble. But here's why we have a hard time defining ourselves, and I'm saying we because I'm one of you, is that we're also called the sandwich generation. We're stuck in between two different generations, and both of those generations are kind of, I'm going to say, influencing us positively and not so positively. And so occasionally, like in my role, I'm in between both generations in my job, and I'm trying to please these people, and I'm trying to please these people, and I feel like, why am I just trying to please everyone, and no one's trying to please me? I don't know if any of you guys feel that way, but we are somewhat stuck between two generations that are quite unique and have their unique demands. And occasionally, we're the people that have to interpret for both generations, the other generations. And it can put us into an interesting situation when it comes to leadership.
For sure. And then millennials, very idealistic, tech savvy. They have been raised with the internet. You know, maybe some of them didn't have it when they were younger, but they've gotten used to it. It's a regular part of their lives. Very much self-starters. They value community and the togetherness, the whole aspect of what we can all kind of do together. And for them, it's not so much about the end result, it's the process, how we got there. Did we become friends along the way? Were you genuine? Were you honest? Like, those are the things that are important to that generation. And yeah, again, higher value on process than results, which always can be interesting to other generations who are like, let's get this done. And they're like, yeah, but let's talk about why. Right? Like, can't we just, yeah, let's sit and discuss the process first.
So, okay, so how does Gen X experience leadership? We value equality, but we have this thing of like, who's the boss right now? Who, and that can be hard for us.
Let's talk about the millennial experiences of leadership. I know for, in my time of being led, I would like to think that, but I'm unique, I'm different, I'm not like all the rest of them. And that is millennial 101-ism, okay? Because I was told that I had all these opportunities and there were loads of things in front of me that I could do whatever I wanted. If I put my mind to it, I could be anything that I wanted to be. We had this promise and this potential put in front of us that was said, hey, you can do and you can be. And the good and the bad of that side is, yes, you have a lot of go-getters that are ready to jump into it, but they also expected a different experience when they got in. They expected that when they jumped in, they would be able to be the managers right away. Because who needs experience? I have attitude, right? That's good enough. That should work. And that's one of the things we hit, because the millennials wanted to be a part of the action. Like, they wanted to get in from the beginning, and they wanted to know that they had buy-in, because again, they were told we would be able to have whatever it was that we wanted. And when that did not happen, then that also created a shift in leadership, because we said, well, if we don't have it this place, maybe I can find it in this place. And if that doesn't work, I can find it in this place. Because again, we're trying to find that space, I would say, as a generation, to say, this is who we are. And we don't want to be defined by the work we do. We want to be defined by the type of person we feel we are. And our job is just something that's going to come alongside and complement that. So that's why, you know, for a lot of us, we look at, I love the laughing okay. In the front row.
Can you guys notice this, actually? You might be thinking, well, that's just what Rob thinks, but these guys are all nodding. So just be aware of that.
And so in this process, then again, too, we would say that millennials in particular, they wanted to be heard, they wanted to be acknowledged, but they also wanted a two-way street. Because again, we felt like if we were open and honest with how we were feeling and what we were doing, that the other generations would respond in turn. And so then, good gracious. So sometimes, and I would say, you know, I could say, well, Terry, I feel this, I feel this, I feel this, I feel this. And it's met with a, so when are you going to get that done? And it was like,
yeah, right. Well, get it done. Come on.
But I don't feel like getting it done right now, you know? And so, and yes, these are kind of overblown for the situation
at hand.
You
just want my job that I spent 15 years working towards, and you want it after 5 minutes.
Because for us, again, we have this, the importance is on relationship, maybe not so much on the aspect of leadership, because if we can trust you, if we have a connection with you, then we're willing to work, which speaks to the issue, as Terry said previously, of the Gen Xers, experiencing that, like, well, you're not even, like, why are you talking about all these things? Like, we're just trying, like, I am leading you. It's like, no, but I want you to, you need to be involved in my hobbies. Why don't you listen to me? How come you can't do the stuff I want to do? Sorry, camera guy. But, you know, this is, like, this is the nature of that generation of saying we want to feel because we were told we could be and achieve, and that gave us this sense of, not entitlement, because I think that's one of the things you hear from millennials, is this, well, you're just entitled. You think you can get this stuff. It, because we were kind of told we could get this stuff, so we're just hoping for something. But I would say, as, and I say this lovingly, Kevin, as the baby boomers have held on, it's the, you know, when a train hits the brakes real fast and it just chunk, 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 and just backs and backs and backs. This is what our generation is experiencing, because it's what your generation was experiencing. As you even said, we don't have any pensions. Well, we laugh at the fact of, in the 1970s, you could sell encyclopedias door to door, buy a house, two cars, send kids to college, and have a retirement. Now we work four different jobs and hope that we could pay rent because it's $6,000 for a one-room apartment, you know, kind of thing, or something like this. So here's these things that we're bumping up against, for sure, on a regular basis. But what do we do with then? I don't remember what the
I'm going to make one comment on just on the feeling side of things. So one thing that I've learned with working with millennials, because I would think what works for me works for everyone, right? And what I've learned is I have to really think about the person I'm leading. So especially the feeling special or feeling listened to, I have to work out what does feeling listened to mean for Rob? And actually, it's different for what feeling listened to means for Rachel, somebody else who I've led. And it's different for Shelby. And it's different for... So I think in our generation, leadership was more of a one-size-fits-all. And that's what we experienced. And what we're having to learn is actually my leadership, how I lead Rob, has to be what's best for Rob, not what's best for me. And that's a whole new skill set that we've been trying to learn.
And on the flip side... And on the flip side, too, we've had to learn that we need to be respectful and understand where they're coming from, because otherwise it is just going to be this all the time.
What do we do with this information? Well, there's two different ways, and I've been in leadership situations where it's a fight. You know, and when you're going to fight, someone's going to win, someone's going to get their own way, and it's usually the boss, and someone's going to lose, and it's usually not the boss. However, that's what the boss thinks. I got my own way today. But when that happens, actually the boss is lost. Because tomorrow, what happens tomorrow?
I don't care about the boss. I don't care about anything you said. You know, why would I want to work for you? Or I'll quit.
Yeah.
I just did.
So
the largest new Reddit that formed is called, do you know what the name is? Has anybody heard? Anti-work. Anti-work. It's the fastest growing Reddit in the last couple of years. And it's all about people who have put up with ridiculous bosses or terrible situation, whatever else, but it's growing because it's this attitude of, you just came and told me what I don't want to hear, and I don't care anymore, and I'm done.
So we've got to be really careful, because, you know, I might be right, and I might win my argument today or win the battle today, but actually I'm losing the war. I might be losing really valuable staff because I'm insisting on winning today. So I can win today and have somebody else lose, but that probably means that in the longer run, I've lost, and they've gone and found a different boss. And so it's gonna be really important to find a win-win solution. How can we both win?
Right, because we need, and this kind of goes back to what I was saying previously of, there needs to be a mutual understanding on both sides and a willingness to say, I'm not gonna be able to get everything that I want in this scenario, and neither are you, but not at the expense of the overall whole or the mission. Now granted, in a missions agency or in a missions environment, hopefully we're there for the same reason. And our purpose and focus, especially being Jesus to the unchurched or whoever else, is what we want to lock onto. So I'm willing to say, hey, I don't need to have it exactly my way because this is our ultimate end goal. Now, in a larger sense, sometimes that doesn't always work because of the nature of, say, the field or the organization or whatever it might be. But that's what we're aiming for. That's what we're hoping for. And that's the only way that we're going to get a win-win is that mutual understanding.
And the thing that I found really helps, especially as I'm working with both generations, well, four generations now, is always assume best intentions. It's really easy to default into judge mode. And I found that when I'm going into a meeting, if I'm hurt by someone or frustrated with someone from any generation, even including my own generation, if I flick this switch of assume best intention. I assume that Rob wants what's best for him, not only for him, but for me and the organization. It changes how I respond to what he's saying. It changes how I listen to what he's saying. So if there's nothing else you get out of today with any generation, always assume best intentions would be a really big help.
But now for these guys. So iGen, take it away.
So here's an interesting thing. If you ask millennials what the iGeneration are like, you'll get a slightly different answer than if you ask my generation. And my generation tends to be slightly more, I'm not gonna say positive, but generally I would say we do speak about them a little bit more positively. Which is interesting.
You're always more negative on the one that you're closest to.
Yeah.
I kind of feel. So, The Gen Xers look at the millennials and go, meh. And we look at the iGen and go, meh. So, at least it's mutual.
So generally, one of the concepts I've heard about them, they say that they're the generation we, not me. I have got no idea who we're talking about when I say generation me. Really don't know. But generation we. So this means that they generally, the iGeneration are more connected, like globally. Like they're much more connected, but they also think in a much more communal way. So they are much more, and I'm talking in generalizations here, they're more willing to make personal sacrifices for their community than possibly other generations were.
Correct. We also talk about, we've said it a couple times already, the buzzword of a global culture. And I think throughout history, we've applied that to different generations. This is the first truly global culture. Kids in America are listening to Korean pop music and following Mexican fashion trends while being influenced by a Senegalese kid who lives in Italy. And this is just one normal day. And you know who I'm talking about, right? You know exactly who I'm talking about. So, with that in mind, you're now dealing with this entire, like, you're not dealing with a specific culture that is, say, just specifically American or just specifically even Western. Sure, there's underlying pieces, but now their influences are coming from literally all across the globe, and it increases every single week, month, however, and it will continue to increase in terms of how these influences then play out into the lives of young people.
So the other thing is generally they're not risk takers,
yeah.
Which is interesting because in developmental stages, so if you know anything about how the brain develops, the frontal cortex, which is the thing that's responsible for reasoning, it's not fully developed until about the age of 25. And the amygdala, which is the fight or flight or fright or like thrill seeking part, that develops early. And the brain kind of develops this way. So in general, the reason why young people tend to take more risks, tend to be a little bit more foolish in their choices, or less, generally, my generation, every generation looks back at young people and say, like, we never did that. Yes, we did. Of course we did. Because, I mean, and it's the way God designed us. But something really interesting is that the iGeneration, for some reason, are not generally risk takers, which has some good implications. It means that sexual promiscuity is down, drug taking is down. Things that were like thrill seeking things tend to be going down right now. That on the whole is a good thing, but what's going up right now?
Anxiety and mental health issues are through the roof. In fact, the Surgeon General of the United States last year said the new health crisis on the horizon was not COVID, was not anything along this line. It was the mental health situation within this young generation. Because as the risks have gone down, the increase in the time in phones, which has then impacted sleep, which has then impacted, again, brain development, a number of different issues at hand, but the mental issues are going through the roof, and anxiety and those things we're going to encounter more and more and more in a workplace environment. So what used to be, and I say this in a loving sense, the millennials kind of snowflake mentality, well, I don't really feel like that today. Now you're going to get something entirely different of like, I can't even get myself out of bed or in the position to put myself in a place where maybe someone is going to say, hey, this actually wasn't really great. And that is going to be soul crushing to a large portion of this generation that's coming up. And that's why we find ourselves honestly kind of scratching our heads, because maybe they need to smoke and drink and get into trouble and get off their phones. That's the thing that would fix it, so to speak. But we're still trying to figure out, I would say, what's the best way to move forward within this generation.
And so they actually crave community, but don't know how to build it. And when I say community, it's groups of 4 to 6 people. Like the I generation love to swim in groups of 4 to 6 people, but especially because of COVID and being stuck on the phone, they don't know how to build those communities of 4 to 6 people anymore. And that's something where we can help, because our generations knew how to do that. And we can shepherd young people, especially if you're, is anyone here a youth worker? Anybody here actually work with young people? So one of the simplest, easiest things that we can do is create incubators for those communities to form, 4 to 6 people. And that would be a major barrier against the mental health issues that are coming up. But especially because of COVID and now the war, this is something that teachers that work with young people or psychologists are saying, like, in about 2 or 3 years' time, we've got a big problem ahead of us, a really big problem ahead of us. And schools are seeing it already. My wife has been a teacher for many, many, many years, and she deals with mental health issues now like a gazillion times more than she did even 10 years ago. And that's something that's not on the radar screens of a lot of churches yet, because the generations tend not to mix with each other, or mental health issues are still kind of a bit shameful for a lot of cultures. But it's something to be aware of. If you have young people in your church, probably a number of them are already struggling with mental health issues, but their parents don't want you to know. And so that is something that we need to be aware of as we even walk alongside the parents, who many of whom are now older millennials. It's something that we need to be aware of. So
is there hope on the horizon? Is there something we can all come together and rally around to say this is actually a good thing? And the answer, we think, is...
Well, especially when it comes to the leadership.
Leadership. Yeah, yeah. Sorry. I should have clarified that one. Sorry.
So there are different leadership models out there. And part of my job is to examine different leadership models around the world and work out what is applicable to this region and to different generations within our organization. We've introduced one leadership model that works across all generations and across all cultures. And we can also look at each of these things and say, actually, this is what Jesus did. We saw this. But the true answer to your question is, let's go back to Proverbs and just beat everyone that doesn't behave. Sorry, no, that was bad humor. No. Sorry.
But we're great for my parents, right?
There is this leadership theory. It's part of transformational theory. And this particular study is called the Leadership Challenge. Has anyone heard of it?
Leadership Challenge by Kuzner and Pazes.
So it's a 30-year ongoing study. So it's backed up by 6 million data items so far. But that's one of the reasons why we think it's good. There's a lot of data to support it. But for us, as we've introduced this to people of different generations, they can all understand it and can all agree that this is a good thing. So we're going to talk about 5 leadership behaviors, which we think that all generations can agree to. Now, they might interpret it in a slightly different way, but this is something that I believe if you were to use these behaviors as you interact with people older and younger than you, you would have an impact. So the first is model the way. So do rather than tell. So be what you are expecting others to be. And we've all been in situations where the boss says one thing and does the other, where the parents say one thing and do the other. And it doesn't look good. So model the way, so be the behavior that you're hoping and expecting that other people will do. And a key phrase with this is...
Do what you say you would do.
Yeah, do what you say you will do. Do what you say you will do. So model the way.
Next up is inspire a shared vision, or inspire towards a shared vision. And this is the idea of saying, hey, here's what we're aiming for. This is what we want to achieve. This is the reason why we're all here. Let's go get them. And I think especially for millennials, but also for the older generations to say, hey, there's the mountain, we're gonna climb it. If you can be inspired to do something, you're gonna wanna be a part of it. You're gonna wanna be a part of that team in particular.
But what's the key word here? Well, there's 2 key words.
You're gonna have to give me that one. I don't remember off the top of my
shared.
Head. Yeah.
Very often the vision that an organization has is the vision that the boss has created, or their team. The boss creates the vision and tells the team, this is what we're doing, go. But especially with the way generations are working now, it's really important that, and this goes with the third one, that people feel like they're enabled to be a part of the vision making. That it's their vision, it's not the boss's vision. Now, obviously, if I'm joining an organization, then I need to be joining an organization that whose vision I agree with. So the vision of, or the mission of my organization is to equip young leaders to fulfill the Great Commission through the local church. I'm behind that 100%. But what's also really important is that my organization enables me to act, and it means that they enable me to be a part of the process of working out how do we do that. So we don't just tell people what it means, but we enable people to say, how do you think we should do that? And we actually enable people to really make decisions.
And then within that dynamic of making decisions and enabling others to act, we also leave space for challenge the process. Because we don't just always want to keep doing the same thing we've always been doing, but you need to have space and opportunity for people to come in and say, how could we maybe do this different? What would it look like if we tried X? I know that you really enjoy this, but how about we try that? And so this idea of challenging the process also gives more opportunity, again, because if you are enabling others to act, if you're inspiring a shared vision, then naturally you will challenge the process. Like, look at SpaceX. That's my primary example of somebody who said, hey, why not just have the rocket come back and land on the ground? Why do we need to dump it in the ocean? That's a great idea. And then they make it happen, and look what they're doing now. So challenge the process. And then lastly, Terry, you wanna?
Encourage the heart. And it's really important. Like, this is last but first, especially if we wanna work alongside people long-term. Remember at the beginning, we said people join a vision, they join an organization, they leave a leader. And so it's really important for me as I'm working alongside people of all generations to be thinking, how do I encourage Stephanie? But how I encourage Stephanie is different from how I encourage Rob. And that's something else that's really important to understand. I learned this as an important lesson. There's a guy on one of my teams called Andra. And when it comes to technology, he's just the most dependable person you can imagine. If Andra's on your team, the technological side of anything will happen. You never have to worry about it. And I used to love showering people with praise. And so at the end of big events, I love to get people on the stage and show my appreciation. Like, thank you so much. Like, this event could never have happened without you. Which, for Rob,
love it. Every single second. Can I have a microphone too and talk about how I feel right now? Wonderful.
But for Andre, that was the absolute worst possible thing I could do to thank him. Because he's quite a shy introvert and hates praise. So that's the worst possible thing I could do. But I used to treat one size fits all. That's what I thought leadership was. And someone had to come alongside me and say, can you please never do that for Andre ever again? Because it's actually having a very bad impact on his wanting to work with you in the future. And I learned with Andra, what he wants is a two-line email just saying, thank you so much for everything you've done. Which, when I get that kind of email, I'm like, yeah, you're just writing me that.
Copy and paste, right? Yeah. It took a lot of effort. Oh, wow. A lot of effort on that one there. Gracious.
So,
all right.
Model the way, inspire towards a shared vision, enable others to act, challenge the process, and encourage the heart. And this works on all generations. So as I said at the very beginning, both Rob and I are still youth workers. I've been a youth worker for 25 years, so I've worked through all the generations. And I will say, for those of you that were like, my generation, what do I do? I love, love, love working with the I generation. I love working with them because I believe if you give them the space to act and walk alongside them and encourage them, they do amazing things. And they are willing to serve if you enable them to. They are willing to listen if you'll speak to them in a way that they can understand. It sometimes means I have to send a text message or send a meme or something, but I personally, as much as I loved working with the millennials, I sometimes hear people being like, oh, I'm so nervous about working with the next generation. And what I would say is, oh, please don't be. Please don't be, because they are joy to work with as long as, and this is youth ministry, you're relational. That's youth ministry, relational. Everybody wants to be known. And that goes back to Jesus. So that maybe the key thing for you is that Jesus met people where they were and challenged them to go forwards to the next step in faith or in behavior or in something. But he met people where they were individually and spoke to people individually. And I think that's the future of working with all generations, is to see people for who they are, not who their generation, culture, role, position, or anything else is.